radioalburn.com.
Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 13th of March 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Unfortunately, we are not live tonight, but this is pre-recorded, and we do have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, the Freemasonic victory of World War II, and the soon-to-be-released Churchill's Body Count. The debater extraordinaire, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, hello, sir. How are you?
Well, fine. It's not a problem to me. Like, I know about debate extraordinaire. It was kind of a debate which I wanted to do and went along to do, but it soon turned out to be not what I thought it was. And I had a choice of leaving, but I'm not one for running from anything. He ran away twice, come back and started dishing some names, which I'm pretty sure you'll know that if it was in the same room as me, it wouldn't even dreamt of it.
Well, this is the thing. Well, let's just inform our listeners, because some of them may not have listened to the debate, may not have heard it. Last Sunday, you went on Adam Green's No More News, which is a popular channel. Adam Green is a popular guy. He's a truth seeker. He looks into the conspiracy theories. He exposes Zionists. Unfortunately, he's fallen in with this Christopher John Bjerknes, who promotes the idea that Hitler was a secret Zionist and a secret communist and was working for Israel. And obviously, his friends have said, look, this is nonsense, Adam. And, you know, you should really get someone like Dennis Wise on your show. So he set up this debate, basically, between this Christopher John Bjerknes and you yourself, Dennis. And we're going to be talking about that today, because it didn't really go as expected, but it turned into a bit of a slanging match, unfortunately. And that seemed to be this guy, Christopher John Bjerknes, his technique, basically, his debating technique was to shout over the other person, insult them and call them names, and run away. I mean, he ran away twice instead of just calming down and making his points. And when Adam tried to step in there and he said, right, well, each one of you has just make your point, try and keep it brief, and then the other one can answer you. And he would just go on and on and on and on, and it would all be just like irrelevant minutiae. And again, that was another part of his techniques. He would come out with something absolutely irrelevant, and then he would ask you whether you knew what he was going on about, Dennis, and you would say, well, that's irrelevant. And he would say, ha-ha, I've got you. You don't know what happened in 1920 with this person and what he said.
That's right. And what's things a man with the pogroms in Poland? When he said, well, how many died? And I said, off the top of my head, I haven't got the figures, but thousands died. Well, but you don't know the figures. I said, what does that matter? Thousands died. Hitler ain't going to stand by. He waited 6 months. But it was like making a lie to the fact that people were dying and the fact that I couldn't give him an exact figure.
Well, he was trying to say that that didn't happen, and it was known that that happened. I mean, that's why they were having a summit, and they'd been waiting to have this summit for 6 months. The Poles were supposed to come along. They were told, this is your last chance to avoid us going in there and rescuing these Germans. I mean, it's all known about. It's in the White Book. All the diplomatic information that went from Poland to Germany. Another point that was referred to, you were saying about Roosevelt, and this didn't really come across that clearly because the sound got messed up. Mm-hmm. And you were trying to explain to him that it didn't matter whether Hitler had declared war on America right near the end of the war. That's Roosevelt had already been involved in the war from the beginning, and you were trying to point out how right back at this Danzig question, Roosevelt was trying to encourage this war. So why don't you just explain that now, how Roosevelt was secretly trying to get this war off the ground, basically right the way back at the time when Danzig question was happening.
Well, at the time, Hitler was trying to finish off the Versailles Treaty. And to be honest, he only had that one last level to go to, which was Poland. And he'd done everything, you know, without spilling any blood. He got rid of most of it. He got Czechoslovakia back. But Poland now, we find out with the papers which were being burnt in Warsaw, which the SS managed to capture, has been proven since the war to be not fake, as we said at the time, but actual, these were proper documents.
So hang on, Dennis. Hang on. So this is where this information comes from, is when the Germans went into Poland, they found that the Poles there were furiously burning all these documents as quick as they could. And what was in them?
A squadron of SS ahead of everybody, and they managed to capture these documents.
And what was in the documents?
Proof of Roosevelt's involvement, proof that he was giving promises to France, financial promises, if they and Great Britain would give a blank check to Poland and keep it to a point where they can make Germany invade, because don't worry, like he said to Benes of Czechoslovakia as well, America will be in the war as quick as we can.
Right, so that explains what you were trying to say about how... Yes. About how Roosevelt was wanting war all along. He was involved in the war all along. And it was right at the end that Hitler declared war on America. But it really didn't make that much difference because he'd been involved in it all that time.
Well, I said to him, I said, what difference? Because first of all, by the way, they said Hitler declared war on France, UK and the US, which was wrong. And I pointed that out. I said, no, he only declared war on the US. And this made... Birkenes, you know, set to claim, well, why did he do that when America was just fighting Japan? And like he was trying to make out that, because I asked him and he didn't answer. I said at one point, so you truly believe that once America in the war with Japan, they're not going to come over to Europe to attack Germany? And he just won't answer. He was skipping everything. But he's trying to give the fact that the Germans only have to blame because if they had quit or declared war on Germany, on America, then Roosevelt would have left them alone, which is another joke.
Well, let's go, now we cleared that one up, let's go right back to the beginning where it first started, and you introduced yourself and you introduced your position, and then straight away he didn't give you a chance to really finish. He jumped straight in there.
He jumped straight in. Can I just say before we start, to people listening, and thanks to the people like who got in touch with me since that debate, for him to call me a clown or any other type of name, until he actually betters the word what I've done, if these little books can ever come to a standard and have the impact of the greatest story ever told, then I'll give him every right to call me a clown. But until that day happens, and it's never going to happen, then he's got no right to call me or anybody else a clown.
Well, calling people names is the last refuge of the scoundrel, isn't it? You know, that's the admitting that you've lost the argument is when you just descend to calling people names like he did. I mean, he was calling you a liar, a clown, an idiot, a drunkard, just all these names. That was basically his technique of debating was to try and rile you up and get you angry, to try and make you appear aggressive. I think that was it. But to get back to the beginning. The first thing he pointed out was that Hitler banned these journalists from investigating his past. And, you know, as he was saying that, I was thinking, well, hang on a minute. Hitler rightly banned the Jewish newspapers from slandering him. That was what he did.
Yes, he took him to court, believe it or not, and won.
Yeah. It was quite rightly so, because they were just digging up and, well, making up stuff about him, basically, the same as they do today. I mean, and the point that you were trying to make, which also got lost, you were saying this idea that Hitler was a Rothschild, Hitler was a communist. Right. You were saying, now this is propaganda that's put out there to put people off Hitler. And of course they're saying, well, we've never seen that in Hollywood. We've never seen Hollywood saying that Hitler was a Rothschild. Well, of course not, because this is propaganda that's tailored to the conspiracy theory movement. It's propaganda that's tailored to the truth movement. So to people that, if they hear that Hitler was Jewish, say, they're going to be against Hitler. It's not created for people that believe the Hollywood narrative. It's created for people that are already inquisitive and looking into this. And most of what it relies upon is black propaganda that was put out by the Jews, again, to turn nationalists off Hitler and subvert the nationalist scene back then, exactly the same as they do today with the intelligence agencies. And they tried to subvert nationalist movements, and they tried to get people arguing. They tried to throw mud basically at the leaders of these movements by saying that they're Jewish. And they were doing the same thing back then. It was just black propaganda. And a lot of it came from the Strassers, and the one Strasser that actually survived, and he made it his life's mission to continue slandering Adolf Hitler because Hitler had killed his brother. But if Hitler hadn't done that, they would have ended up killing him. They would have ended up taking over. I mean, there's a newspaper report on it, isn't there? Mike King dug up a newspaper report on it.
That's right. Explains it. But it's like, you can't tell me that they haven't heard of it. If he's investigating Hitler like he says he does, and he's telling me he's never heard of the Rothschild theory, then he's an outlier. I can't for a minute believe that he doesn't know that. But the point was that he denied it, and then by denying it, he would come with one of his fairy tales and insist that this was history, and especially if I'd never heard of it. And I never heard most of it because they were fairy tales.
Well, he was just trying to insult you a lot of the time, and I mean one of the things that he was trying to say, he was trying to say that because Hitler had removed the Jews and because Hitler was hard on the Jews, he was therefore doing Theodor Herzl's work, because Theodor Herzl had said some years back, what we want to do is we want to get Jews to move to Palestine. And the way we will do that is we will encourage the governments of Europe to be anti-Semitic. Well, the governments of Europe don't need much encouraging. I mean, the governments of Europe had already kicked the Jews out 119 times before Theodor Herzl. Was Theodor Herzl a time traveller? Was he going back in time? And was he telling King Longshanks that he needed to kick the Jews out of England so that the Jews would go to Palestine in 1945, or whatever it is?
You know, really, it's hindsight. All this, what happened after World War II, they could now do whatever they want because there's no defence anywhere for the Third Reich once they're defeated, which was another point which Tom raised. He wouldn't let me finish. So at the end of the day, I can't fully trust every book printed after 1945. I just can't do.
Well, the logic doesn't stand up in saying that because Theodor Herzl said he wanted governments to be anti-Semitic, and because Hitler's government was anti-Semitic, you know, that doesn't mean Hitler was doing what Herzl had instructed him to do and he was serving the Zionists. Hitler was doing what the Catholic Church had done for the last 2,000 years.
And then he said to me when I brought this up, he said that I was trying to blame it all on the Catholic Church, and went into his, this was three cousins, World War III, all about three cousins fighting, which was, again, ridiculous.
I don't think he understood when you were trying to refer to the Catholic Church, because you weren't given a chance to explain what you're saying.
I mentioned the Versailles Treaty being a Freemasonic celebration, and that didn't resonate. He just doesn't know.
Well, also, I think what he was trying to do is trying to hurry you and get you flustered. Because when you try and hurry yourself, you know, sometimes you might put the wrong word in, or you might not explain things so well. I mean, from working with you for the years like I have, I know that you've got to take your time and you're very careful, and you've got to think and not be distracted when you get the information out. And he seized on that straight away and thought, right, well, I'll keep interrupting, I'll keep shouting him down, and I'll keep insulting him. But the logic there is just not there to suggest that Hitler was working for Herzl. And straight after that, he accused you of saying Hitler was a vicious anti-Semite. That's not something that you've ever said.
He
did that quite a lot of the time. He was mischaracterizing what you had said and saying that you actually said the opposite, and shouting it out in the hopes that people wouldn't have realized that actually you were saying something different.
And because I forgot how many times I kept saying to him, don't put words in my mouth.
Well, this is
what we were doing.
Yeah, well, and particularly with the Catholic Church, and he didn't get the point that you were making. You know, that Hitler was basically doing what the Catholic Church had been doing for all those years, the Nuremberg Laws.
Exactly.
You know, he was saying, well, look at these Nuremberg Laws. They did exactly what the Jews wanted. They said that the Jews had to marry the Jews and they couldn't marry the Germans. that is a Christian law. It goes back to, I think, 400 AD when the church first brought that law in. And Hitler makes reference to it, that it was originally a church law. I think he makes reference to it in Mein Kampf. And he says that, and they stopped doing it a couple of hundred years ago. They stopped actually doing that. But that was a Christian law, the same as it was a Christian law that Jews had to wear certain items of clothing to identify themselves so that the Gentiles knew that it was a Jew that they were doing business with. And it was part of Christian law that they had to live in a separate area, which were these ghettos. And they were all part of the Nuremberg laws. And yet, according to Bjerknes, by Hitler doing that, he was serving the Jews. He was doing that for the Jews.
And I was lying.
Yeah, it's just it's insulting, really, the way that he was arguing against you. And then he was talking about how come Hitler had certain members of the NSDAP, and he was accusing them of being communists. But I would suggest they were former communists. You know, one of the great successes of the National Socialist Party was in bringing communists to nationalism and turning them around. Right. I mean, it was a fantastic success.
Yeah, Mussolini was a socialist for them, but changed, which he mentioned. He said he was socialist. He said he was, but he changed. But again, I'm lying.
You know, I think there were 6 million communists when Hitler came to power. And within a year or two, there were no communists because they could see that National Socialism was far superior. And that's the only way you can have socialism is within your own nation. You can't have international nationalism or international socialism. It just doesn't work. It's taking from one group to pay another group. If it's within your own nation, how can you steal from your own family? How can you take from your own family? You can't, because you're all part of one family. That's why National Socialism works and International Socialism doesn't. It's basic logic. So of course he's going to have people that were once communists and have then become nationalists. I think there's quite a few famous ones like that.
The thing was, right, was he kept insisting that the Soviet Union wasn't communist, it was socialist. And I said to him, they were communists because communism is an international social, you know, they invade, they want to spread their ideology worldwide. It's well known. They're international. And in 1920, you know, they invaded Poland. They'd already started. So this crap about them just being a socialist government, I was trying to emphasize the fact. But then Adam jumped in and started mentioning Poland of World War II. I was talking about Poland just after World War I. So it all gets lost again.
Well, a book that we could recommend that they read is the Goebbels book, Nazi Soze, which explains all about the difference between National Socialism and International Socialism. Goebbels wrote two books, and he wrote those books before the National Socialists took power. It was something like 1932, when they were just formulating the National Socialist doctrine. And it goes into great detail. There's two books. They're only about 40 pages long. They were little booklets that were handed out to people to explain just what National Socialism was. So you don't have to read all the way through Mein Kampf, because that can be hard going sometimes. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to read is these two books by Joseph Goebbels. So that's all Adam Green needs to look at to see that National Socialism was nothing to do with Marxism, nothing to do with communism. And this idea that's what Hitler was doing is just ludicrous. You know, another side of it is if you take Bjerknes' logic to its end result, he's basically saying, well, the Jews had done nothing wrong because why would Hitler have done these things? He just did these things because it served Israel. He just removed the Jews took them out of the positions in government because it served Israel. Well, no, he did that because they were subverting the nation. They were subverting the country. That's why Hitler removed the Jews from their
Berlin
positions in office, and he wanted to remove them from the country. And the only place that they could send them to feasibly was Palestine. They looked at Madagascar. They looked at a few places, but there was already this system in place for them to go to Palestine, and the Zionists worked with them, and that was great. That solved Hitler's problem. But he had already written about how dangerous that would be, but there was no other choice.
Yeah, I mean, he just wanted rid of an alien race, which was not comparable to his own race. As I tried to explain, you know, it isn't just what the Jews are, it's what they do to a culture, which didn't fit in with the, you know, the German culture. And so they had to go. But they had to go without causing a war. And nobody wanted them. England, America, nobody wanted them. The only people who would take them away and he could get rid of them peacefully were the Zionists.
And they were, and they were saying about, he had Jews there, and or something like that. And the thing is, Hitler did have quite a few Jews there. He had that Emil, or whatever Schaufer, his name is. There were quarter Jews that served in the army. There were quarter Jews that had served in the First World War. It wasn't this persecution of the Jews. It was trying to stamp out communism. And once the war had started, it was the subversive types that were put in the camps. And a lot of the subversive types happened to be Jewish. But international Jewry was causing all sorts of problems for the Jews within Germany, who were saying, please stop with this economic boycott. You don't speak for us.
You're right, because they weren't trying to stab just 2 million Nazis. They wanted to stab all Germany.
And he also asked whether you'd read any of his books. And we have debunked a couple of his videos. Where I forget
a while back what they were called. I can't remember. I'm never going to read his books.
But we went through two of his videos and we pulled apart all the statements that he made in them. And you know, why would you waste time reading a book when you can see that the person that wrote that book is just deliberately trying to deceive people? Because when the quotes that he was using, he knew he was taking them out of context. That Samuel Untermeyer quote, and it refers to the people just giving him, like, I forget what the exact wording is, but what he was talking about was Hitler there, not what the bankers did. He was talking about the response from Hitler. The response from Hitler the sneer was the response from Hitler, not the response from the Jewish bankers. And he knew that. And yet he tried to twist that. There was a couple of times actually when he was twisting a quote to try and make it sound like it was saying something completely different. Because you really had him on that one. So we have debunked his videos, but I know that people don't want to give him the attention. They don't want to dignify him with debunking him or and it's the same with Michael Hoffman. People don't want to dignify Michael Hoffman with his recent work that's attacking Hitler.
Recent work, exactly. Same, isn't
it? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I read the first chapter of that and I was just shocked at what he was saying in there. It was just so weak. He was saying he was basically saying the Protocols of the Elders of Zion is a load of nonsense. That's not what we see happening around us. And what Hitler really should have done is used a book called The Traditions of the Jews. I think it's by someone called Joseph Eisenmenger. And while it is a good book, all it is a Christian deconstruction of the Talmud in saying that the Talmud contradicts the Bible. And how is that? How does that explain everything that's around today? That's a theological argument. That's not going to wake people up. That's going to be of interest to Christians. But that was what the whole chapter is based upon. And, you know, I just couldn't believe that was his argument. Because the protocols are mind-blowing when you read them about everything that's going on today.
Everything's come to pass,
So another bit that he was going on about was the funding of the National Socialists by the Jews, and you had covered that, and that's what you were saying was, yes, they were funding the government with these loans because they were expecting Germany to default and then they could just steam in there and take everything. That was one bit where the Jews were funding them. Another side of it was, you had rich capitalists who didn't want communists to take over, who were also funding the National Socialists. So, and we see the same thing today. You see sort of right-wing Jews that will back groups like UKIP or Matteo Salvini's party. Yeah. And it's the same thing there, because it's better off for them. But that doesn't mean that Hitler was beholden to them and he was doing what they say, because Hitler had already laid out in book form before he came to power what his doctrines were. The National Socialist doctrines were fully formed by the early 30s, and you can read them, and they didn't change. I mean, they had their 25 points, didn't they?
Yeah, well, he said that Hitler had been schooled around about 1920 to for this communist rhetoric, And I said to him, when Hitler was 17 and went to Vienna, he wrote in Mein Kampf that when he first arrived, he never saw any Jews, didn't know nothing about it. But when he learned, suddenly, he saw Jews everywhere. And the fact that when he joined the army, and he'd won 6 medals and an Iron Cross First Class, and was well known to be saying about the strikes back home caused by the Jews and the communists, brings this ludicrous suggestion of what he's bringing up, just as ludicrous as what he said it is. It's just ridiculous.
Well, this brings us to another point that he brought up. He was trying to say that because Hitler was a liaison between the military and the communist government of Bavaria, he was therefore a communist. But the communist government of Bavaria was the legitimate government of Bavaria, and Hitler was in the military. And the military has to work for the legitimate government. You don't get to say, well, I don't like the politics of the current government, so I'm not going to work for them. If you're in the military, you are in the military. And, you know, the short-lived communist government of Bavaria was only in power for a couple of years. And if Hitler was in the military, then, of course, he had to, you know, he had to serve the people that were in power. But they were soon toppled. And because you weren't... too aware of all the intricacies of that, you know, he said, oh, well, you don't know anything and la-di-da. And the whole point of the matter is that you have to look at Hitler's actions.
And I said that right at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's all where you can define anybody in history.
You know, that's how you can see that Hitler is a Christian, is by looking at his actions. His actions speak more than words. You know, like getting rid of usury in the banking system, getting everybody back to work. As you said, putting in Christian leaders in every country that the Germans were forced to occupy. In actual fact, when they went into these countries, they liberated them from the international banking system. And the fact that the church itself, the Catholic Church, was backing him. And it was the Catholic Church that put him into power by telling the centre party that they all had to vote for Hitler, and then once they had voted for Hitler, to stand down and collapse the party.
Which, and that's how he didn't know about. And yet, because he didn't know about it, he started waffling on about some of what he got in his book, which meant absolutely nothing to me, and then accused me of not knowing what I'm talking about.
It's all minutiae that he was coming up with. And then he was trying to say that Stalin wasn't going to invade Europe. I mean, the only reason why Hitler was able to get into Russia and do what he did was because all the troops were lined up ready to invade Europe. They weren't ready to defend. They were all lined up ready to invade Western Europe. That's why he had to go in there. That's why he had to go in at the time. And then he kept saying, well, why did Hitler halt then? Well, he halted because he'd been so successful, and they had to stop and get supplies. That's why they couldn't carry on at Dunkirk.
Can I just take you back, Lord, to the time of the invasion? I was saying to him, right, that the only way Hitler could invade was to keep the secret, because surprise was the only thing they had because of the numbers that were on the border. And so when they invaded, and it took 6 or 7 Christian nations with him to take down Stalin, he come back and said they never invaded, and Stalin knew all about Hitler going to invade anyway.
Well, that was when he pointed out that he had a breakdown, and he didn't know that, and he tried to ignore that, and he tried to talk over you. So just explain what happened there.
The fact of the matter was that Hitler had got word back to say that the Russians were coming on the border. They just defeated Britain and France. And Churchill had gone to Roosevelt. My own personal belief is that the bankers control both America, England, and the Soviet Union. So Roosevelt can't get an army for him yet, because the majority of the Americans, 90%, do not want to go to war again. So the next thing we find is Stalin's army on the borders of Europe, about to invade. I believe, you know, it's come from the bankers, but that's beside the point, that they're about to invade. They've got paratroopers, and they've got tanks which you can whip the wheels off, the tracks off, and put the wheels straight on and bomb down the motorways. The point being, because Hitler knew about this, he had to keep it absolutely secret. Even the German people on the morning of the invasion were stunned. He also had to get in touch with these other nations to keep this secret because of the value of the surprise. When they invaded on that morning, they captured millions. That week, it took millions of soldiers all ready to invade. he's saying that Stalin knew and let these prisoners be caught because he wasn't going to invade, but he knew that Hitler was going to do, which was rubbish again. But point being, he then set off to take Stalin down. And then he came in with his point, oh yeah, but then he stopped to turn off to Leningrad, and then he stopped to turn off to this one over. Well, the point being, when you are going into a country, the last thing you want are major areas behind you, which are not under your control. So he'd have to surround Leningrad, and he'd have to surround a couple of other places so that the main task force has got a clear run with no hassle from behind. But he's got his own fairy tale version.
Well, that's just common sense, isn't it? You don't want to be enclosed by the enemy. But what happened with Stalin having a breakdown? Because he just disappeared, didn't he? When this happened, when he heard that Hitler had come right the way in, what happened? What did he do? What did Stalin do?
He vanished. We know that for a fact. It was rumored that he had a nervous breakdown, and it was also rumored that somebody from either, I can't remember whether, I think it was probably America, went in and started to run the country for Stalin while he was having his nervous breakdown. I can't remember the finer details of it. But eventually, when he got to Moscow, it was believed that Stalin had already left Moscow because, you know, the anticipation was this German army can't be stopped. But then the winter struck. What the worst winter they've seen in centuries, and it lasted longer than any other winter. And he's saying that wasn't the reason they stopped. And I'm saying to him, well, I'm sorry, I've seen the footage of the tanks frozen up and the guys trying to free up the tracks. But to no avail, he then came out with a lot of his fairy tales and dubious sources.
Yeah, it came six weeks early, and it was a particularly harsh winter. And Hitler was also late in starting Operation Barbarossa because he had to go and bail out Mussolini. Didn't he invade Greece or something just at the time that they intended to leave? So you know, when they intended to leave had been 6 weeks earlier, so they would have been able to get in there with the clothes that they had. They didn't have time to make winter clothes and all go in there with winter clothing. They had to get this done quickly, and that was the technique, was the blitzkrieg. It was steam in there as quickly as possible, which was the first time this has ever been seen on the battlefield. Steam in there as quickly as possible, move as far as you can possibly get, and then wait for the others to catch up. And that had been a big success up until that point. But if they'd waited around until they'd got winter clothing and all the rest of it, by that time Stalin could have been in Europe.
It
would have been too late. And he kept asking.
I'm trying to emphasize that this is what makes Hitler one of the greatest men of all time, because he actually stopped this invasion. And we all know what happened when they finally did do 4 or 5 years later. But again, all denial.
Well, one of the other things he kept saying was where did you get your information from? Where did you get your information from? And you really should have turned around and said, well, you know, my dad fought for Hitler, fought on the side of Hitler. That's where I get my information from. An eyewitness, a primary source, a primary source, to inspire all those people from all those different countries, all those different legions from all the different European nations to go and fight against the Bolsheviks. And you think the guy was a fraud and he was really working for the communists or really working for Zionists?
And every speech he ever said was opposite to what he was really thinking.
And all these people prepared to die, prepared to give up their lives and be hanged at the end of the war. Like the two British guys, hanged as traitors happy to give their lives up.
He would have no idea. He'd be clueless.
Well, the other point he kept trying to talk about Jacob and Esau. So obviously he doesn't understand that the Jews themselves are descended from Esau. And the Jews are the Edomites, and it says that in their own encyclopedia. Yeah. Flavius Josephus explains how that happened in his histories of the Judeans, and Strabo talks about it as well, that the Judeans of Jesus' time were Edomites. Herod was an Edomite. Yeah. The Pharisees were all Edomites. They were Canaanites. It's the Jews themselves that are Esau. So he's trying to say that this is all some fulfillment of prophecies from thousands of years ago, but he's got the people around the wrong way around for a start. He clearly doesn't understand, about the ethnicity of the peoples involved in what it's talking about in the Bible.
Yeah.
I'm just having a little look here to see what else I've got in my notes, because obviously I'll just let the listeners know, while you were having your debate, I was firing off messages to you, which you were sort of like looking at today to try and remind us of the things that were actually said there. I think I've covered most of these, the bits about Theodor Herzl. Are we fulfilling Theodor Herzl's commands then by, you know, exposing crimes that the Jews have done? I mean, well, that's his logic.
The transfer agreement. It brought up the transfer agreement. And again, like I said to him, the transfer agreement wasn't that well known. He said it was, but it wasn't that well known until the mid-80s, because the Jews had always said that they were the victims in Germany. If they left Germany, they left with have their shirt on the back. And it was only in mid-1980s, 85, 86, when Edwin Black, who was a Jew himself, brought this book out and explained that wasn't the case, and that Hitler set up these transactions for the Jews to get down into Palestine with all the wealth. His own parents disowned him for making this public, and he's still despised today. And the fact that I mentioned it in The Greatest Story Ever Told was I wasn't afraid of it, because I knew what it was. It was a means of Hitler getting rid of an alien race. Again, he comes with Hans Christian Andersen.
Well, that was a benefit to the Germans, and it was a benefit to the Jews, and it was peacefully done. That's, you know, so they solved the problem. It solved the German problem, which was to remove them. Another bit that they kept going on about, and I really couldn't believe this. I could not believe the logic that they were trying to apply to this. The fact that the Jews have mentioned the number 6 million before World War II. I mean, we know about this. You use it in your documentary.
And
most people use that to say, look, can't be the number of Jews that died in the Holocaust, because that's an incredible coincidence. The fact is, the 6 million number is a number that they've been using for at least the last 150 years. And they've used it in all sorts of different incidences. They've said that there were 6 million Jews perishing in Russia from starvation. They've said that the Tsar was killing 6 million Jews. You know, they have accused lots of different people of killing 6 million Jews before it actually got to World War II. And yet their logic was to say that because they had this 6 million number that the Jews use, and then the so-called Holocaust supposedly killed 6 million Jews, then they were carrying out the Jewish bidding by doing this, because they killed 6 million Jews. I mean, the logic there is just not there. He was trying to say that because they were using this 6 million number 150 years ago, that shows that they had planned this Holocaust to happen 150 years ago. And that's, you know, that's not logic. All that shows is that they liked using this 6 million number, because because they said it about the Tsar, you could say they had this plan that, you know, the Tsar was going to kill 6 million of them. They didn't have a plan that the Tsar was going to kill 6 million of them. They just used that number in the papers as an exaggeration to try and get people to feel sorry for the Jews. And it was
ritual. That 6 million, that's got something to do with the Kabbalah. Because even when they brought the Auschwitz figures down 1.5 million, they were still saying 6 million. There's something about that number that they keep pushing. And when I mentioned it, at one point I asked him, do you believe in the Holocaust? And he was stuttering and stammering, and so was Adam.
Yeah, I think in quite a few places, you were both thinking the other person had actually said something different to what they had said, which made it even more confusing.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Because, you know, I think you were asking them that, meaning, you know, the burnt offering. And I think they were thinking, do you mean Jews were persecuted? And some people might think, does it mean gas chambers? You know, is the Holocaust gas chambers? I mean, it means all sorts of different things, doesn't it?
Well, I asked him about that, and he said, well, I believe that the Jews were rounded up and put in camps and left it at that. I said, that's not an Holocaust. That is not a burnt offering. Do you believe in the Holocaust? And then more bumbling and stumbling and whatever. I said, just give me a yes or no. Because I know Mike King did an article on him saying that he does believe in the Holocaust. He doesn't believe in the gassing so much, but he believes that certain Jews are taken out because of either the younger, the old, they wanted the best of the Jews to survive and kill off the weakest. This was his pathology. But he just turned around and said, no, I don't believe it. And that's when I said, well, that makes Hitler even greater then.
Well, the weakest of all the peoples that were living in Europe were at risk during the war, surely. You know, the weakest of the Germans, you know, especially on the continent. I mean, if you've got a war that's raging around you and you can't get the supplies in and you can't get the food in, it's going to be the oldest and the youngest and the, you know, the members of society that may be disabled or weak. They're all going to be the ones that are most at risk. You can't just single out the Jews and say, well, because the Jews were in the camps, it was a deliberate ploy to just get rid of the weakest ones. I mean, so in some instances, the Jews that were in the camps were better off than the Germans that were outside, because at least they had all these rations and that were provided for them, and they had all their food cooked for them, and they were looked after, and they were in places that weren't bombed by the Allies. It wasn't until right till the end of the war that the Allies started bombing up close to these camps, but they were quite happy to bomb all the civilian areas. So the Jews were, you know, in one of the safest places by being within these camps.
That's right. Well, the thing was that he was going on about Hitler actually carrying the 6 million out, but then in the next breath, he don't believe in it.
Yeah, that was a confusing thing. Because if they're saying, well, because Theodor Herzl or the Jews at that time, they were mentioning the number 6 million because they had it planned that 6 million Jews were going to be killed in the Holocaust. And he said, and that was because they were sort of paying penance for their sins. So they had this plan that 6 million of them were going to be killed. Well, we know that 6 million of them weren't killed. We know from the Red Cross numbers of how many people died in those camps, and it was about 250,000, and that wasn't just Jews. So it wasn't 6 million. The 6 million is just the number that the Jews came up with after the war. And that's changed. You know, they've said 11 million and other things, but they do like this 6 million number. And they understood that because they referred to it as gematria, and you were referring to it as a Kabbalistic number.
Yeah.
Both terms, you know, pretty much mean the same thing. But they must believe that Hitler did actually kill 6 million Jews, or that prophecy wouldn't have been fulfilled, would it? That little bit of...
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, that's why I asked him the question. Because Mike King said that he believed that the Rangers had shot him, not gassed him. But that's still, you know, in the eyes of the world, an Holocaust.
Well, we've looked into some of that, haven't we? And that was supposedly the Holocaust by bullets, wasn't it? And it was the Sonderkommandos and in Eastern Europe. And it was after these countries had been liberated, and they ended up having problems with partisans and terrorists. So they had to try and stop these terrorists, basically. And that's what they were doing. They weren't rounding up and killing Jews for being Jewish. They were going after terrorists and partisans who happened to be, a lot of the time, they happened to be Jewish. Because this was a war, really, of Judaism against Christianity, is what you can say.
Which is what I said, and he, again, refuted.
Well, that was another bizarre leap of logic as well, because you say, well, look, you know, obviously the Jews won the war. And the Christians lost the war. Look around you. And yet, from his logic, he's saying, well, I don't know what he's saying. The Jews were fighting against the Jews if Hitler was serving them?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But the guy doesn't know history. It's obvious. He was accusing me of that. But the thing was, I mean, someone's even put a comment somewhere saying that I actually said that I praise Hollywood because they praise Hitler. Where'd they get that one from? God knows.
I don't know. I think in some instances it was difficult to hear what you were saying because you were both talking over one another, and maybe there were difficulties.
I know, but some people in America, you know, some parts, they can't really, especially if I'm firing talking, like, you know, fast.
Yeah, there's that difficulty as well. There was one other bit that I was needing clearing up as well. But the bit that you were talking about Stalin when he went rogue, because they were thinking that you were saying, oh, Stalin was the good guy. So do you want to explain that?
Put that on me, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, you want to explain that, exactly what you were talking about there.
That's right. Well, like I said early on, I believe that the bankers controlled both Stalin, Churchill and Roosevelt. And I actually said that I believe that Stalin was a Freemason. They jumped on that one. And then I explained it by Freemasonry's own rules. he cannot go in a room, especially talking about World War II secrets, and sit down as a non-Mason. Their own rules wouldn't allow it, so he has to be a Freemason. Right, so I'm saying then to him that what happened at the end of the war, Stalin turned. For some reason, now I believe that they did definitely take a trainload of Masonic literature back. The Germans had taken from all over Europe, and a lot of it was on this huge train. So when he gets his train back to Moscow, his boys are going to go through it, and if he sees something that he's not supposed to see, which the odds are, it's true, because he was never supposed to see all these papers, then there's something, he's seen something, and he's turned. And he even persecuted the Jews, leading to the Jews eventually poisoning him. But this was all denied by Adam Green and Burtness. And even then, when I said in the early part of the century, they had anti-Semitic laws, which brought the death sentence, and he was querying that one. But that's the laws that Lenin brought in, the laws that Stalin continued, and even wrote a part in Pravda about. So, you know.
So he was very, very, very pro-Jewish, and he would execute
very
people
that very anti-Hitler, by the way.
Criticized Jews. But yet, near the end of the war, and we know this is a fact, that there was this train load and it had all these Freemasonic documents in it. And then shortly after that, the Allies don't like Stalin anymore. And that's Stalin right. gets rid of a lot of... Yeah, and Stalin gets rid of a lot of people that happen to be Jewish. I mean, there is arguments over that, you know, he was just purging one lot of Jews for another lot of Jews, and they made reference to Stalin's Jewish wife. But the fact is, he saw something, he learned something, and he turned against his previous masters, is how it looks. And we've seen this before, because Saddam Hussein, he used to work with the CIA. Yes. He turned against his masters. Muammar Gaddafi, he used to work for the intelligence agencies, and he turned against his masters. Yep. So you got the same thing really sort of happening here with Stalin. Up until that point, they had been backing him all the way, right from the beginning, the bankers were. But then after that, he wasn't on their side anymore. So something did happen to sour that relationship, and it could well have been the information that he found within this train load. But that's not to say Stalin is a good guy.
It is quite possible, because he wasn't meant to say any of that.
Yeah, it's not making Stalin out to be somebody good. Saying that he discovered something that made him fall out with the rest of them. Because when you were saying, you know, he fell out with these Jews, I mean, he did. He fell out with the Allies. And that can't be argued against.
About Freemasonry, early on, saying that they were a tool of the Jews. And he was coming up with some crap, saying that this officer was a Freemason. I was kind of carrying money when I said too much. But you've got no lodges to go to.
Well, this was the other thing. This was the other thing. He was trying to say, you were pointing out that Hitler got rid of all the lodges in Europe, and he exposed Freemasonry. He made films about it. He had exhibitions, and they would raid the lodges. They would get all the information from it, and that's where they made that film, Dark Forces, from. And, and he was saying, yes, but there was a Freemasons that were working in Hitler's government or whatever. But what you've got to think about is, at the time, all the people that were in the top levels of society are Freemasons, the same as it is today. If you were to get rid of all the Freemasons, you would effectively get rid of all the intellectuals. You know, you would be doing what communism did. You'd be wiping out all the intellectuals. So surely what Hitler would have done would have been to keep around the ones that were loyal, decent people, because Freemasons aren't all bad. It's just that there is this little conspiracy clique that is within Freemasonry, and that the rituals and the things that they do are all very pro-Jewish.
So, well, just because he says he's a Freemason, I mean, he's right.
Well, and if he was
evidence.
If he was saying that he was a Freemason, I mean, that would have been from before the lodges were all got rid of. And just like there were people that used to be communists that were serving alongside Hitler, there would have been people that used to be Freemasons as well, I should imagine.
Yeah.
You know,
it wasn't just Germany. It was Spain. It was Italy. and Croatia and all the other Christian countries. He wiped all the countries that returned to Christianity in 1941 ended Freemasonry. It doesn't get any more clearer.
And how can that be serving the Jews? How can that be serving the Jews to get rid of the Freemasonic exactly. lodges in these countries when basically they were set up to serve the Jews when the Jews couldn't take part in civil society? They needed people to advocate for the things that they wanted. And they would use the Gentiles. Use the Gentiles in these Masonic lodges. And that's why they've all got titles to do with Solomon, and it's all to do with the Kabbalah. And even you go back to the Templars, the poor knights of the Temple of Solomon. And you got that link right there, even back then in the 13th century or whatever it was.
Well, that's right. Plus the Catholic Church, along with the Nazis, were the only organization to fight them.
Yeah.
So it's a surprise to see that, you know, the Christian countries all reappearing.
You know, it makes far more sense to say that Hitler is doing the bidding of the Catholic Church rather than Hitler is doing the bidding of Zionism, because the Catholic Church had those same laws, as we pointed out, that the Nuremberg did. The Catholic Church had a big problem with communists infiltrating it. It had a big problem with progressives and liberals, and what Hitler did by putting the subversives in the camps, he cleansed the church out of the subversives. So the traditionalists were able to take over the church again.
And don't forget, he's saying to me, all this is rubbish when I'm talking. And when I say to him, well, why did the Catholic Church smuggle as many National Socialists out of the country, out of Europe as they could, and then in 1946 sent 200 million in gold down there? What, did he just have a bolt of lightning strike them? It's obvious why they did, because these people were fighting for them.
I mean, that's quite well documented, isn't it? I'm trying to remember the book. We did Behind the Dictators, and we did a series on it, didn't we? Behind the Church Behind Fascism, or something like that, where we went into quite some detail with that.
I've got clips of documentaries of people talking, saying, you know, that the, in 1946 they sent $20 million in cash and in gold down to Argentina.
I mean, one of the other things he does, I think he tries to say that Putin is still a communist or still a Marxist.
He did say that.
And in their constitution, they're writing a constitution at the moment, and it's got in the constitution, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it says that the Russian ethnicity are the builders of Russia, and they have to stay in the majority. Russia as a nation believes in God, and God is like at the center of the Russian nation, and it talks about marriage is between one man and a woman, like excluding homosexual marriage. All three of those things are not something that somebody who was a communist would do. But communism is atheistic. He was trying to say that communism didn't promote homosexuality. When the communists took over that Bavarian Socialist Republic that they had for 2 years, they did away completely with the age of consent. They allowed pedophilia. They allowed abortions. And obviously they encouraged homosexuality as well. They encouraged absolute complete degeneracy. And that was the origins of communism and socialism. So to say that they were against homosexuality, I mean, they may have had to have been later on, decades later, but when they, at the Weimar period time, which is, you know, basically a mirror image of everything that's going on now around us, then they were promoting it.
Exactly. At the end of the day, you know, I'm saying to him, there was a time where I felt, you know, I give Putin the benefit of the doubt because of his Christian laws and because he didn't allow men to marry men. But then I said, I do feel, however, he's too close to Israel now to trust, which I don't think is a bad statement. But he is what he is, you know, and he went off on one of his rants again.
And also, the thing is, with Russia, and it's very different there. I mean, you've got, because under communism, when they were USSR, they were an empire. They were a world empire, and they controlled a lot of land. So even though they were persecuted and starved and badly treated, they will look back on that time and be proud of it, because they were a world empire, because they were huge. So they want to be patriotic. So they look back at that in positive eyes. And yet at the same time, you've got Solzhenitsyn, who will write 200 years together and expose everything about the Jews. And that gets discussed on the floor of the Duma in Parliament. The so-called Holocaust gets discussed there. When the Jews managed to pressure Russia into making this law that you couldn't have any revisionism or question the narrative of World War II, a Holocaust revisionist did point out that 6 million Jews can't have possibly died, and he did a lot of revisionist work. And the Jews then tried to take him to court. They got their Chabad Lubavitch lodge or whatever it was to do this, and they thought they were going to win. And they took this guy to court, and they lost. And the judges said, this is not the correct interpretation of this law. This law is to stop false propaganda, not genuine historical research. And the Jews lost, and that law got overturned. And that's the only place where, a Holocaust denial law has ever been overturned. And that was in Russia. And if Adam Green wants to learn about what Russia is actually like from somebody that properly studies it and is a doctor of theology and whose specialist subject is Russian history, he should be interviewing Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rushjournal.org, who's written a ton of books, makes a lecture podcast every week with us here at Radio Albion. And if he would interview him, then he would get the other side of the story about Putin, because I mean, he's written a biography of Putin, and he was saying like 10 years ago that people need to be watching this guy. And it's since then that Putin has done a lot of good things for Russia. So if you want to know the truth, he wants to interview him, not Bjerknes.
I did say that the way the world was today, the fact after World War II and this other empire won, this pre-Masonic Talmudic empire won, that, you see today, that's what we're going to say now, it's totally gone.
Well, you were talking about, it was two empires and one empire lost. It was the Christian empire, the end of the Christian empire.
Yeah, we do that. We don't particularly have a left and a right today. What we do have is a left and a right of this empire, where people like in Hollywood and Clinton and Obama are tending for the communist one world government. Whereas Trump and Putin and now you're with the sound of things, that they're tending not to go down the communist route. And that's a split between, the Jews, but it doesn't matter. The Jews will win in the end because there's only they won that war. But he won't let me finish.
Yeah, you got left-wing Jews and you've got right-wing Jews, and that's because they won the war. That's the paradigm we are in now. That's the situation that we are in. So we just have to make the best of that situation. You can't have somebody like Hitler now. You couldn't have somebody exposing the Jews.
That's why I was the band, you see, because people like CNN are all on the communist side. So they obviously want Alex Jones, who was spouting the Trump side, and got him banned off YouTube. And they hate Trump.
Yeah, we have to adapt ourselves to the world that we live in, the post-war world, which, it means that we can't strongly adhere to the same principles that they had before then, because it means that you wouldn't get anywhere. I mean, if you look at these political parties, the populist parties, all of them have got a pro-Israel wing, and because of that, they're able to do things for their country. Like Salvini was able to get immigration, like get rid of 98% of the immigration when he was in power. You've got Viktor Orban, who's managed to increase the birth rates of the white Hungarians. And these people wouldn't actually be in their positions if they didn't have this Friends of Israel bit. It's just a fact of life after the war.
It's like Iraq.
Well, look at Iran and look at the way that Iran is treated and ostracized and all the rest. We have to accept that the world has changed. We have to understand where we come from and what we've lost. But at the same time, we also have to adapt so that we can try to prosper in the world that we're in now. Well, I hope that you do end up going on with Adam Green on your own, Dennis, or else I hope he interviews Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. But I wouldn't bother giving this Bjerknes, the light of publicity.
He's only going to interrupt.
Yeah, just very rude, insulting and interrupting. And he ran away twice. And really, if somebody's going to start calling you names, that means they've lost the argument, because that's all they can do. They can't actually come out with an argument to rebut your points. So they're just going to call you names instead, which is basically what he did. It's a very low form of debate. Well, anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. Don't forget, we do require donations to keep the website going. And until we see you next time, we hope you'll have a great weekend.
RadioAlbion.com